Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line Podcast. This is your hostess, Kat, and today I have with me other host, Carl.
What's happening, people?
Hey, Carl. What's going on?
Fancy Fembot and a robot minister on the machines again.
We are talking about Westworld today.
Yay, at long last.
And we're talking about the finale, and I guess maybe the latest few episodes or how everything came together. In the finale. So, have to say, one of the best shows this year. There are some, of course, other good ones that we'll get into, of course, like The Expanse and Mr. Robot and a few others that were outstanding as well, but this one is like the most recent favorite, I have to say.
Actual science fiction in sci-fi. How about that?
I'm so spoiled right
radical.
Now.
Radical concept these people are putting down. I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled.
So, all right. Well, let's start with some of the big stuff. So we had Daryl as he was listening to our other, y'all remember Daryl, he comes on the show sometimes. He was texting me as he was listening to our episode, and he had to point out how wrong we were about a lot of things.
This is not a dissertation we're putting together here. We're just exploring possibilities.
Well, I will have to brag on him that we were right, Carl, about Bernard being the voice.
I think you called that one. It took me a second, maybe. I said, you know, that could work. But yeah, you got that one. Well done.
And to be fair, it was also her voice, sort of, as well. Right?
But it sounded like him.
So it was him, but it was him trying to get to her some weird roundabout. Another thing that I was sad to be right about is that Anthony Hopkins ended up being the Sean Bean.
Well, yeah, but he made it through the whole series, you know, the first season, which was not the, you know, same thing.
Yes, he did. Sean Bean got decapitated, like, the last couple of episodes of Game of Thrones.
Well, yeah, but, yeah.
He lasted. Like, his head was on there for at least two episodes.
Rolling around. That doesn't count. Hopkins put in a real good amount of time. He great performance, and we really got to see him and know his character. I thought it was considering his level of stardom, for him to participate in this in the way he did. Well done. I liked his character. God. I liked his role. I don't feel Sean Bean, he was gone too fast. I really felt like he was gone too quick. This was a solid. It was a Shakespearean ending for our dear Anthony Hopkins. I mean, that's how you roll. That is.
So that brings me to because I have show notes. And let me say that the next thing that I have written in my notes is that I think today that we're missing that Shakespearean acting in TV today. We're missing the dignity of style and the flourishes of intellect. And I mean, you remember how we used to get that from Star Trek TNG,
come on, between Jean-Luc between Patrick Stewart and what's his name, Avery Brooks, that's enough Shakespeare between those two alone.
Yeah.
for 20 years right there. They packed it in.
They did.
You do not hear the enunciation that you would get from a Jean-Luc Picard making his primary point on it. You don't see that kind of that level of mass of weight given to the roles. And man, let me tell you, Avery Brooks has some flourish that at times is a bit too much flair.
It's coming real.
I mean, that was a lot coming out of Avery Brooks. But it's true. It's true. You know, we do not see that kind of scale coming out of anything these days. So, yeah. I mean, it was good. I mean, look what hell, look how far they had to go, man. You pulling down. I mean, to really get somebody on the scale of Anthony Hopkins to try to revive the theatrical scale of what they were trying to do. They weren't playing. That was the big gun. That was the big gun.
And, you know, also speaking of Star Trek and TNG and DS9, you know, I think maybe we responded well to Westworld because, you know, how they always decided that Star Trek was going to be like wagon train in the skies or whatever they used to call it. And then like stars. And then Deep Space Nine was like the outpost or whatever. And so it was like the Wild West in space. So you think, I mean, is that a thing? Do you think maybe we responded to it in the way we did, because basically what we've been watching is Westerns all this time? I mean, Defiance was definitely.
Look, I'm not willing to go quite that far because look, you and I are not huge fans of Westerns.
No.
And when you go back and you watch Star Trek, any of the series of Star Trek, I would say that while there might have had an adventurous spirit to it, and without the original series backlot heavy-handed Western episodes, I really don't think that Star Trek feels like Westerns to me.
Deep Space Nine with the outpost.
I mean, no, because just that. I mean, an outpost could be an island. An outpost could be any place removed from civilization. It doesn't necessarily have to be the dusty West.
Okay.
Like Babylon 5. I don't think that was a Western, but that's an outpost. You know, so it's being separated from the laws of the polite society is one thing, but I really don't get the vibe of Western. The only time I feel Western in sci-fi was, yes, Defiance, which that aspect of it I didn't like too much. And two, Firefly, of course. And that's what kept me away from Firefly for you know, almost a year, was the fact that it was Space Confederate. So I was like, really? No. And then you know, I was convinced to watch it, and I enjoyed the other aspects of it. So now I'm not buying it. What I do think, I mean, is probably what your initial point was, is why this was better received, is, you know, Star Trek was actually quite Shakespearean. You know, when you talk about Star Trek, most of the big themes, most of the really powerful episodes and the big ideas behind Star Trek were typically captured in Shakespeare or in play type concepts. It was always, you know, you're confronting God, or, you know, what's man's position in the universe, or, you know, how do you define your place compared to someone else's, that, you know, that kind of stuff, that kind of bigness is what we really enjoyed about the original Star Trek, and what's been missing from a lot of modern science fiction, I think. You know, you could probably make the argument for modern Galactica, but even that, I think something was, in my opinion, they didn't quite hit it with modern Galactica.
I agree.
Westworld managed to really hit a sweet spot with the conflict between man and machine and what that line meant. I think Westworld did it much more powerfully, and when you think back on the layers of what it was that they were doing in this season, in this first season of it, it's really, really amazing, really, really powerful. We got a lot to discuss.
Okay, do you want to start with the Man in Black?
Well, hey, might as well. I mean, he's like the index for everything that we're talking about here. I mean, I guess, you know, the biggest thing that we can talk about and that we can address here is how Westworld played with time.
Oh my God!
Everything that we were trying to put together about this story, everything, all the mysteries that we had in mind or the questions that we had totally taken out, had totally excluded the concept of time. Really, the fact. I mean, you want to start? We're jumping in here.
So one thing that I want to say about The Man in Black before we get started on this Westworld is that Yul Brynner in the original. In the original film was a robot. And so we had in mind that the Man in Black had something to do with robot. He was half robot, half full robot. We didn't know what he was doing. We didn't know if he was human. We didn't know anything about him. So for him to take this huge twist, not only this twist, but some weird time thing that you're talking about, Carl, that we really... Even though Dolores was literally shifting backwards and forwards in time, I still did not put those together that they would be the same guy. I had no idea that they were going to do that. I had no hint that they were the same guy, William and the Man in Black. And for them to reveal it the way they did, beautifully done, nicely done.
And you can't say it came out of the blue, because I gotta admit, when you're watching Westworld, there are all these hints. There are all of these little stray threads coming at you while you're watching it. And because there's so many of them, and because there's so much happening, you can't hold them all and pay attention to the story. I mean, you can feel that there are details coming at you that might be important later. But if you were to sit there and try to hold all of those threads in the air at the same time that you're trying to watch the show, you just lose something. And so obviously, the one thread that stood out for me that I kind of held but I didn't want to acknowledge it was at the beginning when we first meet William, and he's about to enter Westworld for the first time. And is given the option to choose the white hat or the black hat. Now, I mean, you couldn't get more Matrix than that. And at the time when he makes the choice of the black hat, it seems so anti-William. What we know about him and just the spirit that he has, his hesitancy for going in, you know, all that. The black hat didn't seem to fit him at that
time. He chose the white hat.
He chose the white hat? Did he?
I thought
he chose the black one. Don't let me mess this up. I thought he chose the black one. Did he choose the white one?
I thought he did.
Oh, crap. Now I got to go look it up again. And I thought he picked the black one. Oh, crap.
Okay. let me look it up. But you keep talking. I will look it up as your...
Yeah,
as
check.
Because it was the second episode.
Yeah, all right. Well, if I mess that up, I feel real bad now. Because, there were hints like that about which direction these characters were going to go, and stuff when you see it again, it's hard to hold on to all of these pieces of things and try to hold the story and be present for the story as it's happening as well. There's just too many loose threads. There's just too much. It's too much information coming, and it's fun. This isn't a burden. This isn't a problem or anything. But it just feels like too much information coming at you to try to hold that out and at the same time be present. So and of course, Dolores' memories, you have an idea. I mean, when I say that the time, I don't think it's until the final episode that we realize that Westworld has been online for, what, 33 years?
I think we knew it, but we didn't know that we were seeing it.
Well, I mean, do they tell you early on that it's been going for 30-some years?
At least 33, because they said at the beginning, you and I talked about this, where there was this thing where they said there was an incident that happened 30 years ago. And then we was like, okay, so we know that there's Westworld now, and then there was an incident that happened 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You remember that?
Okay, yeah, that's coming back to me, because the development of the robotics that happened over that time, Dolores is going to look exactly the same out externally that whole time. So when she's having her flashbacks and she's having her memories, you know, I didn't get the feeling that it was over that much time, you know, even though they say she's one of the oldest ones. But now, you know, when we see William Man in Black, you really get a tangible idea of how much time has passed in the Westworld world and how much stuff has changed over that time. It's you know, that's just one index for what is going on that I guess you just take for granted because you don't think about stories happening that way while you're watching it. So yes, the aspect of time was a very critical big one that I did not pay enough attention to while trying to put together what was happening during the space of Westworld.
Yeah, I think that was just, I mean, I'll repeat myself, that it was just so well done because there were so many reveals that I was not expecting. With this whole show, I just expected it to be a story. I expected it to be straightforward. So when we had the first reveal of Bernard being one of the robots,
Androids, yes, our personal favorite moment.
I thought that was the end of, like, they couldn't bring anything else that could blow my mind because that was it. Like, that was it. But
that's
then,
the big twist. That was going to be it, like the big M. Night turn. And then, wow, you know, woo, that was, you know, he was dead all along. Now, what are we going to do? Can't do nothing to surprise me now. No. Westworld is just slapping you after that one after another.
And then, so they brought out, like, they brought that out, and with the Man in Black, Billy William, and you remember this discussion we were having about how we thought Teddy was Wyatt, and how Teddy, why Teddy would all of a sudden go bad and start shooting. Yes, he did shoot, take the white hat. I'm looking at it right now, which is why I'm having a hard time talking.
He did take the white hat. Crap. Unbelievable. All right. Well, I messed that up then. I guess we're just seeing the evolution or the twist of his character. Yeah. But I,
yes, he took the white hat initially. So we thought, you know, when Teddy had started kind of shooting people and he got upset and he was just, you know, because he wouldn't shoot at first and he didn't have any balls. But then when he started to learn about Wyatt, he was like, oh, I have balls now. You see him just like somebody tap his shoulder. He's just like shooting him. He was like, well, we don't get how he could turn this way and how a good guy can just all of a sudden just start shooting people. And then we saw how William had that same evolution that Teddy did. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Where
mm-hmm.
he wasn't shooting anybody. He was this nice, soft heart. Then after a while, he just got rugged and he started shooting people. And he just became a killer. And the whole while, Logan, his, I guess, brother-in-law, was kind of narrating for us, letting us know that what William was doing was just out of control. Whereas before, Logan was kind of doing the same thing, and why was it a big deal? You know what I'm saying? Like, Logan wanted this guy to get into the game this way. But when he did, it was just like Logan started to back down, and I didn't understand, like, what was going on.
Yeah.
Like, why, after, you know, all this time, Billy getting into the game in this fashion is just over the top for Logan. You know what I'm saying? So
right.
I don't have an answer to that. I'm just, oh, it was just...
Okay, yeah, I was curious about that too. I thought you could give me an answer.
No, I don't have an answer. Like, you keep with, like, I'm having an answer. I don't have an answer. Like, I never figured out, like, how. I think because maybe William took it on a crusade level and he wouldn't let it go and he would leave or whatever, and he kept dragging Logan around and punching him. He had him by or whatever. And
so are we just supposed to accept that William just had that darkness in him? And that's what finally the Westworld unleashed the darkness that was in him, and that's what happened?
Towards the end there, when he was going through the world and he was on his rampage towards the end, he put Logan naked on a horse and, you know, just released him into the edges of the park, and Logan somehow discovered or revealed into himself that he felt that Billy never loved his sister, and his whole plan was to get into the park, prove that Logan was unfit to run the business, take the business from Logan, marry the girl. The girl commits suicide because she didn't love him, or they didn't love each other. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, Man in Black's wife is dead in real life. She committed suicide. And so it's all really tragic, kind of. Like, I don't know. It's just a lot of layers to this guy, because we know at one point we found out early on that he came into the world after he has a daughter. And, you know, his daughter won't talk to him because his mom committed suicide. Does Logan exist? Is Logan one of the Indians or one of the natives that are just pop up in the game that's untracked? Or that, you know what I'm saying? That just like, where did he go? Did he, you know, live out 30 years in the park? At the very end, when we see everybody coming during the shootout, is Logan there as well? Or is Logan dead? Or is Logan out? You know, like, we don't know.
Yeah.
So, those are just some of the things that I'm, you know, that I thought about, like, this whole thing. And then even with a rewatch, Carl, it's hard to try to still put everything together.
Well, I mean, here's something that maybe I'm not quite getting. What's up with the guns in Westworld? So are the guns live? And do the guns actually have bullets in them? That the only reason they're not hurting people is because the machines can't shoot the people? Or is it like, you know, they've got blanks in it and
they no, it's like sand bullets or like rubber bullets.
Okay. Now, see, that's what I was thinking, right?
Right.
But okay, so when we see Dolores kill Bernard, she has a real gun then?
Yeah.
But hang on. They ain't the only one. The next one is when Teddy comes to Dolores's rescue, as when William has just stabbed him. This is not, you know, the last episode, and she's going to thank you for, you know, for whatever he says, you know, waking up my delusions or whatever. And they're going down. Teddy comes, you know, riding in on a horseback, and shoots William.
But he gets up and he goes to the party afterwards.
Well, right, you know, but okay, so here's my next sequence of questions then. So I have no idea why William would have played along at that point, because he's in the middle of saying, everything around me isn't real, this whole thing's a sham, all I wanted you guys to do was to wake up so I could experience something real. And then Teddy comes riding off of this stuff from the sunset, shoots him with the sand bullets, and he's just gonna fall down and play dead at that point. That was kind of weird to me, but hang on, that's not the only one.
But he did play dead because he came in on a horse and he got Dolores and ran off. I mean, so he had to recover because he shot him with those bullets at close range, and he shot him like five times. So that's gonna sit you down for a second.
Well, yeah, but I mean, but that's the question. I'm not sure that was a sufficient delay if those bullets were something more significant. It seemed more like he was playing hurt than actually hurt, because it was only at the instant that they start to ride off that he opens his eyes like he was pretending. I don't know. I know Dolores, yeah, you know, bent up his arm, you know, bent up his arm as they were having the fight in
the
church.
She threw him out of the church.
Yeah,
she punched him several times.
So
she dragged him throughout the church.
Yeah. So knives and you know, kinetics make sense to me in terms of getting crap beat out of you. But the guns, I'm still not clear on, because so whatever the deal is with the gun with Teddy and William at that moment, then we see William carrying the injured Dolores off into the moonlight.
No, you see Teddy.
Teddy carrying Dolores off into the moonlight, and it becomes the final scene of the play, the final scene of, you know, Ford's story for the executives.
Which, yeah.
I mean, so when you're watching Westworld, there are these moments where things don't quite make sense. And this is part of those threads I'm talking about.
Can I make it less sense to you? Remember at the beginning in the first few episodes when they would shoot the man in black point blank and mm-hmm. nothing would happen to him at all?
Exactly.
Not even the rubber bullets didn't even touch
him. That's why I'm going rubber with the double quotes, because
maybe they have different type of rubber bullets.
Because
like when the further you are from the center of the whatever, the more real it becomes. So maybe the bullets get harder the further you are from the center.
Well, that sounds good. I'll take that. But it still does not explain the death of Ford and Bernard, unless we are assuming that Bernard brought one retro old timey gun into the world of Westworld. And that is
why
what
he wouldn't
paid.
He? Yeah.
Well, I mean, but if that's the case, man, there were a lot of bullets in that gun. there were a lot of bullets in that gun.
And a lot of rounds, because.
These guns are a variable ability that I don't quite get, because, all right, at the very same time, these were the guns, not Dolores's Bernard Western pistol that he might have brought in, which was a live pistol, but Teddy's gun for actually taking out all of the hosts. This wasn't a pretend, because he was instructed by Bernard to destroy the other hosts. So Teddy's going through town with his, you know, with his big rifle and dropping all of these hosts around, which we are presuming is doing actual physical damage to them.
Yeah, but the guns can hurt the hosts.
So that's the difference. Wait a minute. So are they actual bullets in them? There's not a lot of bullets that are going to hurt an android that won't hurt a person. So
I know, but I think they're like, you know, at the beginning when the Man in Black's gun worked on the host and they would actually bleed, but when they shot him, he wouldn't. It's some gun engineering going on. I'm just saying, the park has variable types of guns.
Okay. Well, I was assuming it was the same gun, but all right.
No, they just have different types of guns. And I'm going to, I like my theory of the further you get from the center, like the Disney rated G version of the park, the more intense the guns can be.
It sounds clever, and I'll take it because I got nothing else, but I'm still not buying it because
I know,
of the discrepancy, like you said early on, between the gun that could hurt the host, not hurt the host, and I'm not sure. Anyway, so I'll let it go because, again, there are lots of things that when you were watching Westworld, you'll see something, and you're like, wait a minute.
But
and,
you notice you that the host always can hurt or shoot the other host, always.
Well, but I get, but I would also assume that is because there was sort of like a laser tag thing going on. Not that the guns had actual ammo in them, I'd assume, that, you know, they were doing some kind of, you know, playful squib thing like they do in Hollywood when you point it in, you know, the little blood pack explodes or whatever.
What's her face dig an actual bullet out of her stomach?
Because it was one of the hosts. I mean, one of the humans' guns, which are live,
no,
but the hosts are not. I don't know. That's it. I don't know. I'm a little confused about the weaponry.
I just really can't believe this is the thing that we're talking about.
No, I know. We'll get off it because there's plenty of other interesting. But that was my thumbnail for saying that when you're watching Westworld, stuff happens, and you kind of have to go okay, and you hope that it's going to make sense later, or that it's going to come back around in a way that explains itself. Like I said, I mean that scene where you've got Teddy and Dolores having their moonlight discussion in front of the board.
That was weird.
I mean, there is symbolism, and we are under the assumption that symbolism and quote dreams are not a thing in Westworld. Dreams are not dreams. They are actually previous happenings that we are seeing from the perspective of the androids, right? So, I mean, give me one or the other. Are there dreams and fantasies, like imagine things going on, or are these the memories of machines?
What's a dream? What did you think was a dream?
Well, when stuff doesn't quite make sense, I'm trying to assume that it is an imagined experience from one of the androids. I'm trying to think that maybe that's what it is.
What's imagined? What are you talking about specifically? The last ending of the story? What you're saying?
I'm using that as the most dramatic case, but there might, you know, there are other things like, why didn't Dolores wake up to the fact that it was her own voice in her own voice? Why did it have to?
Because it didn't click to her until then. The maze definition explains this perfectly. You can either go deeper into the maze, the further you know with the ball, you can either keep getting closer to the center, or sometimes you could take a wrong turn and not get there. It's just like the journey to knowing who you are as a person. You can keep going in one direction, but you still have to keep maneuvering around in order to get to the center. It's not a straight line, and it's not linear. It's non-linear.
I can take that, but there is a moment where let's see, who was it? Was it was it Bernard or was it Arnold is saying to Dolores that he speaks to her as a conscience to help her, but
to help guide her to hear her voice,
but she never hears her voice at all before that. It's always
maybe she didn't know that it was her voice, and she always assumed that if it was a voice, it was his voice and not her own inner voice.
Okay,
and
look, if that's the case, because all we heard, they're just like I said, there's some things that just don't quite settle
if you're trying to make it make sense in a you're gonna try to build this on a Raspberry Pi right now. No, it doesn't make sense. But if you're talking about in a spiritual sense, how messy the human mind is and how things just aren't that clear when you're trying to figure out another human being, and how, you know, you just can't really understand what's in a person's mind. And half the time, people don't even know themselves as a person. So maybe, like, somebody thinks they're hearing the voice of God all of their life, only to find out that they were listening to their inner selves the whole time. You know what I'm saying?
I always hoped that the mind in the world of cyborgs and androids and robots would be a little clearer than that. But hey, if they got the same issues, they got the same problems, the same delusions.
But then, what? How do you explain how an android goes from being maybe a toaster to a sentient being? Like, where is it that it takes place? What is the thing that the trigger? Where is the actual point where the Rubicon that they cross? You know what I'm saying? Can you pinpoint it? Can you find it? Can you locate it? Is it repeatable? Or is it a thing that just kind of happens?
Well, I actually liked the concept of that they described in Westworld of having the robots, the androids, reliving their memories and having the pieces of memories impede upon the next generation of their consciousness. The next generations of their beings, and having a little piece of what they had experienced in the past carry in to their new incarnations. That made sense as sort of a way to bootstrap consciousness, as a way to try to get there. That made sense to me. But it seems clearer. I mean, that doesn't seem so mystical. You know, that is a stair step toward enlightenment that makes sense, but without having to get all, you know,
well,
all.
But is it mystical, or is it just a different way of explaining it? You know how when Bernard was about to kill himself and shoot himself, and it was a series of code that was about to run to make him do it, and then Anthony Hopkins said, "No, we're not gonna read the code. We're gonna explain this in a narrative way." And so he narrated it in a Shakespearean way, rather than saying robot, lift arm, click trigger, pull out brains. You know what I'm saying? Instead of just like execute, self-destruct, blah, 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 he said, and Bernard ended his own existence and blah, blah, blah. So maybe what you're hearing is mystical description of what's happening, but something as what's her face, that you remember, what's her face, as she was rebelling and she thought she was,
we're talking about Maeve?
Maeve, when she was rebelling and she thought she was doing all these things on herself, and it was a series of freaking code.
Okay, but see, so here's the other thing. So while I believe Arnold bootstrapped, in other words, in the beginning, gave the hosts that he was principally involved with creating the potential to wake up and become conscious, I do not believe that all of them were successful at it. We hear from Ford and Bernard that many of the systems, because of the constant looping and the horrifying treatment, went crazy or failed. Not all of them made it out. I am not certain that Maeve ever attained true consciousness. I'm not sure.
I believe
Dolores did, but I am not certain that Maeve did. The first hint was that cool moment where she's having the conversation with the text, and her ideas are spooling out on the iPads in front of them. I thought that was cool, and I still thought that maybe that was a real-time thing. But the real catch was in that final episode where Bernard, when they wake up Bernard, and he's got the control pad, and he's looking at her, and he tells her, he says, "Look, you haven't you thought about why you're doing all of the things that you're doing?" I believe that Maeve is principally controlled by Ford. I don't think that Maeve achieved true consciousness. I don't. It's just my personal bias, but that
I feel both ways.
Okay.
I feel both ways, mainly because they said she had that extreme reaction of the man in black killing her and her kid, and she did not get past it, and it was just so disruptive that she went back into the lab, into the glass room, and they were trying to get her to calm down and wipe her. They even wiped her, and she still couldn't remember it, and then she committed suicide. And it was just such a thing that Bernard couldn't process that his circuits fried. You know what I'm saying? You remember that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So they say for a second, achieved some sort of humanity in that moment.
In that moment. Because Man in Black acknowledged it. He saw it in her. And I believe that was one of the main reasons that he was trying to inflict so much pain on Dolores, because he was trying to wake that up in Dolores.
Oh.
Right? I mean, got it? I mean, the thing about Man in Black, he's got some odd motivations. Again, the first thing is he just seems fundamentally dark. And so I think he really does start to take pleasure in the pain that he's inflicting, because he was inflicting the pain before he knew it would wake it up. It would wake up any of these androids. So he was just having his party, going to town on poor Maeve and the children and everything, when at that point he sees it wakes it up in Maeve, and then goes, oh, well, maybe I could use this to wake this up in Dolores.
I didn't think that's what he was doing, because I'm like, how depraved can he be when he started raping her? Later on,
I believe that was his last attempt to try to wake up Dolores. And again, even still, I don't know if it's because he still carried the love that he had for Dolores when he first met her, or if now he just wants the game to be real, which is even more destructive and disappointing, because
we got to talk about that, because that's bizarre, but we'll get to that.
So my point is when it comes to Maeve, she's close. I believe she's close to waking up. I believe that the pain and trauma of that moment did break her circuitry to a way that kind of freed her a little bit. But the behavior that you see her, the behavior that you see in her and what she is doing, I am not certain that is independently generated. I think that likely Ford is using her as a tool to free the other machines at the end of this, this play.
I like it.
I mean, that's now the only shred of evidence that I saw that it was not Ford, but it was somehow Arnold that did this. The only shred of evidence that I have of that is in that moment, in that scene again, where Bernard hands her the pad. And says, you know, when he goes, haven't you wondered why you're doing these things that you're doing right now? You know, you're just following a program. You're under control. And he hands her the pad. And if you look at the pad, the sequence of steps, mm-hmm. you know, they say, you know, deceive, coerce, free, or release the other. Those steps are in there.
Yeah.
But in the border of the window, assuming anything we can about user identification, it actually says Arnold in the code. It says Arnold in the code, and it says Arnold in the border of the user interface. I'm still not willing to accept that is Arnold, because here's the thing. When we saw Maeve the first time the techs hand her the pad, and she is, you know, she's saying how free she is, and as she's saying it, or just before she says it, the words appear on the pad. That is a very dynamic code that is being generated. You know, while she is experiencing it, that code's flying out of her, and that's what's coming out on the pad.
So is she saying it and it's coming out on the pad, or is it coming out on the pad and then she's saying it? I couldn't tell, it was so fast.
I had a feeling it was coming out on the pad, and then it's like a quarter of a second later she was saying it. Again, I got the hat wrong, so maybe you need to look it up. Mm. But I thought it was coming out on the pad just before she said it. But even either way, with dynamic code like that was being generated by her in the moment, the flexibility of the code in the moment is not something that a programmer hours, days prior could have explicitly stated. The instructions that we saw on that pad to coerce, to deceive, to free, those are very, very specific instructions to be going out and performing. I'm pretty sure that, you know, maybe it was Ford hacking Arnold's permissions, because at this point he's had 30 years to hack, you know, Arnold's code and to see what it was he was trying to achieve. Yeah. I have a feeling it's probably Ford hacking or using Arnold's permissions to execute this code, because Maeve, not just Maeve's dark personality, which partially we might assume came from her difficult experiences, but also I'm more likely to believe are a reflection of Ford's influence on her. Ford's just trying to get mess done. I think it's Ford. I think it's Ford doing it, because and so the last straw is one, obviously, when Bernard is telling her what it is that she's going to do, that does not imply the freedom that we would expect a self-actualized system to have. But then the very last straw, which was the moment which was like, a blue sky over Mars. The moment like that is when he goes, oh, and you're going to get to the train. And, yep. And she's that moment right there. That moment right there leads me to believe that poor Maeve was never free. Yeah. That is the moment that really just left me. And of course, you know, there's a hint, or I don't know if you want to call it a hint, or I don't know, overshadowing or whatever the heck it is. But when she steps out of the train and the train pulls away and she's standing out amongst the other hosts that are waiting for the next reboot, They are all wearing black. They're all wearing the black skirts, the black outfit. And she had, you know, asked for, Felix, make sure you pack me this stuff, because I need. When she's standing out there and the lights are starting to go out on the pad and she's there amongst the other hosts, she is dressed exactly like the other hosts that are already just standing there waiting to be queued up for the next. She's dressed just like them. And maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it just looked like it was like they were putting her back in the package. The trick of bringing her back because of her daughter, the clothes that she wore, and of course, those moments as she's trying to free herself, her buddy, I forget what his name is, but you know, the bad cowboy that she had recruited, the scene where he can't get in the elevator. Mm-hmm. And, you know, up until that moment, you think that this is a revolution, and these machines are waking up, and you know they're all banded together for the cause. And in that moment, when her cowboy buddy can't get, and you see him trying, he's trying to get through the door, and he can't get in the door, and he's not quite understanding why he can't get in the door. And in that moment, where Maeve turns him around and says, you know, go out in a blaze of glory or whatever.
Give him a row.
Give him a row. He doesn't look very free then either. And so it starts.
Yeah, because his response to that was just bizarre.
Yeah, like, I mean, if he was about being free and being an awakened system, there would have been some anger or disappointment or hurt in his face at that moment where he's like, well, I wanted to come with you. You're my woman. I thought we were going to, you know, run the world again. None of that. It's just a blank, and he turns and he goes right back to fight. You know, if anybody, the Snake Girl had a flake of awareness a bit more than we saw from the cowboy buddy, because you know she don't quit.
Did you see that after the credits?
You know, she is not wearing a black dress to neatly be put away at the end of this movie. She's gonna cause some problems
with one arm.
yeah. Hey, that's the Terminator 2 ending. You know, you can do that. That? All she's missing was the crowbar. Break that sucker off. So, you know, of this new machine generation that's created here, I'm fairly certain that because it's taken me 30 years to fix my mistakes, that Ford is releasing these machines, but how aware they are is the question. From what I've seen, from what I saw, it seemed like Dolores was the only one of these machines, and maybe Bernard, are the only machines that are truly awake.
That are complex enough, because you know when they had the plans when they were killing what's her face, mm-hmm. Teresa, the two that were on the sketches were Bernard and Dolores.
Yeah, and they were the clockwork models. Right. So you know they were some of the early ones, which is the other thing. I believe Maeve probably started as one of Arnold's clockwork models, but I guess we see later on that she's gone full bio. I don't know what that means for her evolution. I don't know if you can carry the Arnold's clockwork awareness code into the bio models, but I just found it interesting that of all of the machines, the only one that we really knew that tried to be conscious that may not have been of the first clockwork generation was Maeve. And even though that was, I believe that was after the fire that she went full bio. I'm not sure about that, but you know, we know that there are very few of Arnold's original hosts still running around that park. And I have a feeling that when Ford made his versions, he, in the beginning, didn't give them the same freedoms and the same potential for freedom that Arnold did.
Right.
So, you know, it's just, you know, again, it's just a lot of speculation. I'm trying to piece together the pieces that kind of made sense to me and trying to figure out what might be happening because,
Well, so I do agree with you that Ford, because of what happened with the Man in Black and then Dolores riding off into the sunset with Teddy and it ending right there for the board to see and have their little weird party, I do agree with you that Maeve's whole thing is part of his final blaze of glory story, because now I feel like in the film, they're all trapped in this world together. And, you know, I'm not sure if they're going to die or not, because we saw the Man in Black get shot towards the end, right? But
yeah,
then
yeah.
He, like, stood back up and he looked off into the sunset and he was smiling like he finally got his wish for the robots to fight back so this game could be real.
Yeah, but, you know, as crazy as he is at this point, even if it was a live ammo round shooting him in the arm, he may have just wanted to stand up to watch the demise of, you know, the demise of humanity. I don't know what that means, because, again, I have no idea what's going on with the guns. But whether he's dead or not, him getting up at that moment
and smiling.
And smiling. I don't necessarily think it means he's okay. I just think it means he was aware enough to recognize what was going on in that moment.
Or maybe he is a robot.
Well, hey, who the hell knows?
You know what? He was drinking his whiskey. He was drinking it just like that robot that was talking about the white shoes.
Look, we thought that Bernard was going to be the final twist. So, and it would be true to the original Westworld, Man in Black ended up finally being a robot, but who knows? Who knows?
So,
who knows?
Another thing that I was really disappointed in him is that he stayed 30 years in this game. See, that is the only disappointment, because he makes no sense now. Why would you stay 30 years in this game trying to get to the center of it? And why do you need that game to be real? Why do you need it to not be fake? You have a real life. What do you need it to be real for? I don't understand that. This is why it's a game. This is why, because you don't need to have those real consequences. I don't get it.
There is that moment early in the series where other people recognize him within the game, And he's like, you know, don't call me that in here. I'm you know, don't go there. It seemed like, one, he didn't like the, quote, fame that he had in the real world. Two, he was likely trying to avoid the pain or mess that he had caused in the real world, you know, between the loss of the wife, daughter not wanting to be around him, you know, all that. It seemed like this was the place that he had went to hide. And after you have invested this much time and this much pain and this much chaos into a place, you want it to be more meaningful than perhaps it is. You know, like the conversation that he and Ford had after Teddy and Dolores ride off. You know, what is going on here? Because that moment where, okay, so now he's shaking off the sand bullet, like you're talking about, the salt bullet or whatever. All right, so never mind the fact he's been thrown through a church wall, had his arm broke.
I think he had on a cast.
What? And I'm not saying that he was 100% at that point. I'm just saying that, okay, he wants the game to be real. Okay, so here comes Ford sauntering up to him. He's been playing this game for 30 years. And Ford's like, so, you finally got to the center of the maze, huh? And he's like, what the hell is this crap? You know, you know, he's like, I've been playing this game 30 years. And you know, all it is this man. Well, I told you it wasn't for you. That dialogue that they're having, because, I mean, I'm trying to figure out still if he was playing along in that final moment, pretending that he was being shot in an effort to free Dolores so he could see how the game would progress. If that is the case, I'm trying to let that be what was happening, because I'm not convinced that the bullets hurt him that much for him to be down that long. I don't believe that's quite what was happening. I think he, for some reason, he was playing along with what was going on. Okay,
but he got shot before, and he went down before. That's not the first time he'd been hit with the bullets like that and been down. It was like in the episode before that when he was by the tree and he got knocked.
Who shot him?
Maybe
it wasn't Clementine.
It was the other hooker lady.
It wasn't Clementine.
No, it wasn't Clementine. Right.
It was the elegant one that escorted him in at the very beginning. Oh,
right. So she did shoot him, and then he woke up next day with like a noose around his neck and a horse and stuff like that. So he can be shot, and they do have variable bullets.
Man, what kind of bullet knocks you out? Oh, okay, well, all right.
Or maybe she hit him in the head or something. I don't know.
Well, and the other thing is likely she was sent by Ford, you know, because he's like, look, I'm trying to get something done here.
Well, she was sent by air quote Wyatt.
Oh, right. Well, okay. Well, Wyatt might be Ford.
Yeah, I still don't get, because Wyatt is a story. Wyatt can be downloaded into Dolores. We think Wyatt is Teddy. Wyatt is not Teddy. Wyatt is somewhat Dolores. We don't know. I don't understand the whole Wyatt. Yeah. I think maybe I wouldn't call him a MacGuffin, but he's definitely like a
disembodied Deus Ex Machina.
There you go. There you go. There you go.
Okay. All right. Just a side moment that I thought was really interesting is obviously, Westworld was written by Michael Crichton. There is the moment where William and Dolores are having their discussion out in front of the church. And Dolores recognizes finally who William is. And she starts her little, you know, her crying. And he's like, oh, the waterworks. And she starts off on her soliloquy about how she's crying for him.
Yeah.
And what do you mean? What are you talking about? And she gives us the line about how, you know, there was a time where beings, big as mountains, roamed these plains. And now all that remains of them is dust and what can be captured in amber. Bones and what's captured in amber. Which is, of course, referencing the dinosaurs of Jurassic Park. But then, so we go back with the dinosaurs and Jurassic Park, and then she says, she goes, I cry because, you and those like you and all that you and all that you are will become sand in the future, and the sand of which those that come after you will be created, and all that will be left of you is bones and sand, and then the new will take over. The new will be created and followed by that. And so obviously silicon is made from sand. So in that one little story, that one little soliloquy, she reaches back to the dinosaurs. She references Jurassic Park with the amber and the bone.
Don't do it, Carl.
She talks about the death of humanity and then the future of the beings made of silicon. All in one little... It was beautiful.
I thought you were going to go somewhere weird. But, what? Okay, good. That's fine.
Right. Didn't you? Isn't that...
No. I got what you're saying, but I thought you were going to go further weird. That's fine.
I'm curious now. What were you thinking? What were you thinking of?
I thought you were about to like confuse it with Michael Bay and go Transformers or something. And I was just like, I don't know where you're going here. Because you said Jurassic Park, and I don't know.
Yeah, but that's Michael Crichton.
I know.
The future world and the Jurassic. All this is Michael Crichton encapsulated in one little.
Yeah, I got it. I just thought you were going to be weird.
Fine.
But you got it. But then, like, we saw Samurai World.
Yep.
Is that a thing? I thought it was just future world. There was Renaissance World, Roman World, future world. I didn't know that there was a Samurai World.
I don't remember there being a Samurai World, but I believe...
all about the Samurai World.
Yeah, but I believe it's very clear that there are other worlds in existence is what I think that was hinting at. So there is likely a future world, or maybe there's a samurai world. I don't know.
But I can't wait to see that world looks amazing.
Oh, there's one other thing. Do you remember the name of the company that Ford went on to?
Helios?
Yes, that's it. Right. Do you know why it's called Delios?
Isn't Delios, it didn't have to do with the sun or something?
I thought it was for Dolores.
Oh.
I don't know for sure, but that's what I thought.
Holy shit. That's cool.
Because he did it for her. Remember in the beginning, he went there for her. Now, my other question is... So, yes, he did Native. My other question is, how long does it take to rebuild the damn Dolores? Because think about it. From the time that he, quote, loses Dolores while in the beginning to the time when he finally sees her with the rolling can for the first time.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, what the hell? How mad does the guy have to go? I'm a little confused because, time is definitely crazy in what we're experiencing in Westworld here. But first of all, there's no Find My Host app in the world of Westworld.
I thought you had apps where you could find all of them.
So if he is looking for Dolores and he's this passionate about it, why is he wandering around on foot with his brigade of cowboys tearing up the joint just trying to buy? And okay, so fine, if a game is that complex.
No, because Logan said that's not what he wanted. He wanted to go around and shoot and kill things because that's what he really, really wanted.
Yeah, but how long did it take for him to really become that? I believe that it's not until he sees Dolores and she does not recognize him. I believe that is the moment that kind of pushes him over the edge.
Yeah, because that's when they do the really cool black hat flip up thing.
Let me have
my moment, Carl. That was so beautiful. I was just like, oh. Okay.
Yeah, that was a wonderfully visual way of saying that we are the same. I thought that was hell awesome. But my question is, how long had he been looking for Dolores until that point?
It doesn't matter. It's fine. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's not really important.
The only reason that it's an issue for me is because It is, how long did it take for William to go that dark? How long did it take for him to go there? Because, I mean, had he bought the game at that point? I mean, how, you know,
to me, it seems like he had to have bought the game like after that point. I feel like maybe after that point.
After the can spot is when he bought the game?
Maybe, because then probably he'd have to go out into the world. He had to have gotten married. He had to have had sex to have a daughter. He had to have, like, been around for the woman to commit suicide. So he was in and out of the game.
Okay. All right. So, but, okay, if that's the case, how long do you think it was
before...
Between the time when he first played the game and William time, I mean, just rough guess. Between them, from the time William walked into that game until the time when he sees Dolores and that can. How long do you think that was?
I don't know, because then there has to be an incident that happens 30 years ago that I can't really quite place.
I mean,
what is the incident then? Is it her waking up and then them opening the park? Maybe I'm confused. I don't know.
Okay.
Can you say what you're going to say? Cause I'm confused.
No. I'm not trying to make a point here. I'm unclear. I'm not clear here. Cause what, okay. So the incident happened before the opening of the park. Maybe the incident is what took them so long to bring Dolores back into the park. Maybe. But wait, he was already playing. So the world had to exist for him to begin playing to start with. So right. That can't be right.
And
that
then so Logan right. had been a few times already.
Yeah.
So that
okay.
can't be yep. right either.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So if that's the case, then what the hell took so long for him to find Dolores?
Because he was looking out. On the far reaches, and they were just keeping her in Sweetwater, and he didn't think to look to Sweetwater, and he was just like, well, maybe I'll just go back to where I started. And it was then that he realized, but he wanted to tear up.
Can we assume, well, So when he would leave the game and then come back in the game and stay in the outer reaches,
I don't know. I feel like this is what I feel like happened. So there's a few, like, say maybe 5-year period where Logan gets in the game and he starts playing and he thinks it's really cool. He brings in William. William gets in the game. He meets Dolores. He falls in love with Dolores. I think maybe that all takes place. Perhaps. I mean, that could be okay. a month. It could be okay. a year.
So, again, this is why time is so weird. The real time that I'm trying to trace here is the time between when he loses Dolores and when he finds her with the can. That is the time, because it's that.
I don't think he leaves. I don't think he leaves the park in that time, and it could be just like a month.
Okay, so that's a month's time.
I'm just guessing, though. My point is that whenever he loses her to wherever he finds her, he does not leave the park. But I think after that, he leaves the park. And I suspect, I can't say for sure because I don't know time, that I after he sees her with the cannon, I think that's when he leaves, gets married, goes in and out of the park. He wants to own it. He knows that it's a game. He could see, like, the veil is uncovered. He sees the man behind the curtain, and he just wants to figure out what, because I think she was having a level of consciousness while he was there, he noticed it, but then it got erased and he wanted to get back to that. So he spent 30 years of his life trying to, like you said, prod her into reawakening. And I think some of his dialogue, he said that she would keep going in a loop to kind of, she would almost get there a lot of times, but she wouldn't quite get there and then start all over and all over. But this, I think, this final time that we get to see is where she finally gets pushed over the edge. I'm not sure what pushed her over the edge because there were so many things happening that I can't keep track. But mm-hmm. she is over the edge and the park is coming alive and things are happening. And of course, he's happy because he needed his park that is supposed to be fake to be real, which is bizarre.
Yeah. His dark motivations are a sad and a difficult thing to try to really understand. I also understand Ford's motivations here. I mean, eventually he recognized that the androids were truly becoming sentient. I find it disappointing that it's not just that he kept the androids trapped in the park, but that he used the park to train the androids about, to teach the androids about the dark nature of humanity.
That's
sad. You don't need 30 years of education to learn about the dark, desires of humanity. That was just tragic. I guess that's the only way I could put it. That part was tragic. But yeah, powerful, sad, interesting.
You know what's sad? Is that I don't know where Luke Hemsworth is.
Whatever. You know, people are making such a big deal about the nudity and impossible sex. I heard folks early in the series, or when the first series first came out, trying to compare it with Game of Thrones.
I don't think so.
Ain't no way. No. This is not at
there
all.
There was a lot of nudity. Well, so I would have to say that this show may have broken a record for most full frontal male nudity, because we saw a lot of that. And I don't think I've seen that much man schlong in a TV show before.
Not
since the Spartacus. Spartacus had a lot, but not as much. Like, we had like a room full of schlong just hanging out. And I was like, wow, I feel like that's a record. But the thing is that there's a lot of nudity on this show, but they weren't doing anything.
It's clinical.
It was just standing still nudity. So to me, that's not the same. If you could just see a person, they're just kind of standing there kind of almost dead or robotic with just being naked, then it's like looking at a mannequin. So it's not the same as Game of Thrones with them heaving and breathing and
And incesting
feeding their grown ass child milk. Shit like that. So raping.
You're bringing back the highlights. Thank you. I didn't get the sensitivity. You know, some people were saying that, and I'm like, what? No, this is nowhere near what we saw in Game of Thrones. So back off, people. I think they did a very tasteful nudity in Westworld.
Can you think about the job description? Okay, so your job description is to sit in a room ass naked with Anthony Hopkins talking to him as if he were a robot.
Look, if it wasn't for Anthony Hopkins, this might be like any other Skinamax B film. Like, yeah, we're going to need you to sit on a table naked, dressed as an old cowgirl slut. Can you do that for us? What kind of movie did you say this was? Oh, it's gonna be big. We promise.
You gotta be a star.
Whatever. If it hadn't been for Anthony Hopkins, I'm pretty sure some of these stars would have been like, "You want me to what? No, I'm out."
That's funny. And then when Bernard had to do the naked scene with Anthony Hopkins, I was like, man, that's messed up. But yeah, I do think it was a lot of full male frontal nudity, however you say that. And I was just like, oh, this is, yeah, that's it. I mean, I think they talked more about sex than they actually had it. You know what I'm saying? But
not a lot happening. No.
And then when they did have sexual scenes, they were fully clothed. Like, Maeve was always fully clothed when she was humping around, or they went upstairs, or it was out of view. Like, I don't really think we had any sex scenes, did we?
Well, not really. There was, you know, the one in the first one or two episodes, but even that was, you know, blue nightlight, and you couldn't really see much going on.
And
there.
I'm just like,
So, yeah, I didn't get people sensitive. We've seen a lot worse in other series. So, hey, back off, people. They did a great job here.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what that's going on. But Let's see. What else do we have? Oh, I read this really cool conspiracy theory online about you remember when Dolores's dad picked up the picture and saw the futuristic girl or whatever.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
So apparently this picture they got is a random picture they got off of Getty Images, a stock photo.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so this stock photo is of a random model from like America's Top Model. She's just, hey, I just took this picture one day and it was this, and I just took it with this guy, and all of a sudden I'm in this show and people are talking about and recognizing me on this show, and I never knew it was going to be in the show, and blah blah blah.
All right, that's bizarre.
That's number one. Okay. That's number two. Number two, though, the photographer is weird because I think the model's last name has the same last name as the wife of the man in black in the show. That's number one. Number two, all of the pictures that this particular photographer takes are reminiscent of all of the screenshots or some of the images that we see in Westworld. So they're somehow connected.
So wait, are you saying that the photographer is related to someone who's involved with Westworld?
Not related, but I'm saying that, like, if he takes a picture of a horse, it reminds you of the horse as it's running in the screen, the beginning of the show. What do you call that? The intro.
Right?
The intro. And if he takes a picture, all of them look like they were inspired by, or Westworld was inspired by, this photographer.
What? Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there's some weirdness going on, and we haven't been fully, because I think I read this on like Mashable or IO9 or something like that, because somebody just randomly dug deep because they were really shocked that this was just a random stock photo that they put in the show.
And then
they dug a little deeper, and it's weird. I'll find the article. I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay. That is very strange. I'd like to see follow up on that. Do we know who the picture is supposed to be of in the
picture?
Story?
Yeah, it's supposed to be a picture of the man in black's wife.
Wife, right? Okay.
As she's young when he's William, so it's a.
Okay, so this was the same picture that he showed Dolores when they first were running and falling in love, right?
He never showed that picture to Dolores. We never really had that picture connected to anything. This is how the picture happened. Dolores' dad saw it in the sand near his horses or whatever. He picked it up, he looked at it, he couldn't let it go, right? And then they had to take him offline because he was freaking out. And he showed it to Dolores. Dolores said, that doesn't look like anything to me. So flash forward to when William is going on his rampage, he has this picture in his knapsack and it just kind of falls out. Right.
And lands in the sand. I remember that, but I was trying to remember because there is a moment when William tells Dolores that he is to be married.
Right. They were on the train, but there were no pictures exchanged.
There's no pictures exchanged. All right. I was trying to remember if she ever saw the picture herself.
No.
Okay. Well, then why was he so freaked out about that? I'm still not sure why he reacted that way.
Who?
Uh, Dolores' sort of dad.
Because he malfunctioned and they were on the verge of waking up. And
but why would that have been a trick? So, I mean, so, you know, this, that, when I was talking about loose threads and stuff that happens, and you're like, well, what did that mean? And what happened? Or what significance is that going to have?
I don't know. Maybe it was like a trigger for Arnold or something. Like, if you were to see something like that, then he start rambling things and you start talking about these violent delights, blah, blah. And then Dolores says that to Maeve, and then Maeve wakes up. And I think they're just trigger words. You know what I'm saying? They're just random triggers that they haven't fully explained to us. Yes, I'm sure it makes sense, or I'm sure it won't ever make sense because it's not supposed to. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. I don't know.
How about the Tex? Felix and his buddy there. They were put in a difficult situation.
Are you talking about the one who had Vaseline? And
okay, not that one. I actually met Maeve's two buddies, the two techs that worked on her most of the time. Not the other guy, but yes, Felix and his reluctant buddy.
His angry, reluctant buddy. Oh my god, that guy is horrible.
He was not a fun dude to be around. I'd hate if he was my coworker. But yeah, man, I'm not sure they made the best decisions.
Yeah, they kind of started off making bad decisions. When Maeve went off the reservation the one time, okay, fine. But when she kept running off the reservation, they had so many opportunities to shut her down.
Yeah. You got that right. And I'm like, guys, really? he can't even get the spine in place right, and then yet she's coming back superhuman. And I don't know. Those guys, I was a little concerned. I mean, I appreciate Felix's sensitivity to the burgeoning intelligence. That was kind of nice. And, you know, you got to be polite to, you know, your machines as they're becoming self-aware. But they were not the most, I don't know what you want to call them, reliable, not the most, they weren't the brightest pair. To usher in the singularity here, that was a little scary. Those dudes.
Oh my god, they were the worst. Actually, I mean, Felix
and technically, given our Vaseline guy, they were the saner. They were the good guys of the tech department. That was a raggedy bunch of techs there, walking around there.
Oh my god, those people were horrible.
Yeah.
I guess it brings it out, you know, these violent delights, man. You just don't get these type of Shakespearean quotes. They was throwing them all in Hamlet, freaking Romeo and Juliet, all of them. And then Anthony Hopkins, you can see him being Titus. You can see him being all of his other characters. That was just so, we need more Shakespeare.
Yeah,
in our sci-fi and in TV in general. I mean, I think that if reality shows are to continue, they should all just start quoting Shakespeare, and then maybe we might class up this joint. You know?
Hey, look! You got what is it? It was Yorick. Ford was talking to a dead guy the whole time, just like, you know, you got Yorick's skull and Shakespeare stuff. Oh, my dear friend, you had it right all along. And he's yelling at the skull. You can't get away from Shakespeare. When you really get good, that's where it all comes out.
This show. I mean, we could just talk about it forever. I just thought it was just so well done. I mean, yeah, fine. It has its problems that you pointed out. I mean, and there's like a couple of articles that I didn't read yet that like, oh, Westworld is the dumbest shit ever. And then they point out everything that was wrong with it. But, you know, can I just enjoy my show? Really?
No, I mean, there's so much crap that's out right now. The only thing, my only real complaint about Westworld is sometimes it took them a little long to get places. You know, sometimes stuff just, you went off on a little side mission and it took a little too long to get back. But given the amount of concepts in space and ideas that they were trying to cover, j-
I mean, we've been through so much bad science fiction. We're like veterans now, all gnarled and gristly. You know, we have been through some crap. So to finally have a world that we can breathe in, you know, that there are legitimate questions, that is like real Shakespeare, that is talking about the future of humanity and the light and the dark side and the emergence of intelligence and all. This is a wonderful, wonderful space to be in. And I got no real complaints. No, not after what we've been through. Remember a couple of years ago when stuff like Stargate disappeared, and I was like, "What are we gonna do for real science fiction?" You're like, "Oh, they'll come up with something great. Don't worry." I was like, "No, I don't see it. There's no science."
Then we started like watching superhero shows, horror shows.
There was no
zombie shows. And then we replaced it with all those.
There was the light of Almost Human. We had Almost Human for a scene. And we were like, it's coming back. And then,
we knew that wasn't coming back, dude. We knew that wasn't coming back.
So finally, some real sci-fi. This is good. This is major improvement.
As a matter of fact, this is the only show, Westworld, that I watch live. And that I was there.
Congratulations, Grandma.
Hush up. I was just like, every, was it Sunday at 8 o'clock? I'd be right there waiting on TV. And that, I haven't done that in a very long time. I gave up Walking Dead, too.
I know. Everybody else is watching it. I want to talk to you about it. We've lost Kat to all the live shows now. So for you to finally sit down and watch them, I was very excited.
That's the only one that I'm really excited. And I think, I think Incorporated, you might like, Carl.
All right, I'll check it out.
It's on Sci-Fi. It's Matt Damon, Ben Affleck.
They produced it?
Okay. I don't think that they directed it. It's not bad. I mean, we'll see. There's some Carl things that I definitely saw that I want to talk to you about.
All right, well, I'll give it a shot.
Some definite Carl things that we've broken records on that. We will talk about movies in a really breakneck pace at some point.
That would be nice. That's the other thing. So I've lost you on the live shows, and you haven't gotten out to see the movies because you're so busy.
I've caught up on a few. Like, I finally saw Star Trek.
Woman, it is December. It's out on VHS now. I mean, geez. I have been waiting since the movie premiere to talk to you.
I actually looked up on my phone for times to see Rogue One. So that's different, at least.
I'll let you know when you've actually seen it. Rogue One had like the biggest opening this year, and you still haven't seen it yet. So I'm dying.
I mean, this is just the first weekend. I mean, at least give me three.
Oh my, 3 weekends? Oh jeez. Anyway, that's great. That's great.
We won't, because we got to do the turn off.
That's right. We need to talk about that. Yeah. There's some crap out there.
Seen The Passengers?
It hasn't come out yet.
Oh, are you going to see it? Because I feel like that might be our turn of the year.
It's not going to be the turn of the year. There's way more crap out already. But I'll see it when it comes out.
Because Arrival is still in theaters, and I was like, okay, because today I was going to go see a film, but I really wanted to podcast.
Okay, so you haven't seen Arrival. Go see Arrival. We can talk about that, too.
Okay. So, yeah, I guess we wrapped up Westworld. I can't wait for next season. I don't know how they're going to top themselves. I don't know what Anthony Hopkins is going to do. I guess he's done. I don't know, Carl. I don't know what's going to happen. Can the show exist without him in a classy way? I mean, we're going to have Bernard, but then he's self-aware robot now, so what does that mean? What does it mean for, like, all of the robots to wake up? Are they going to kill everyone? And if they kill everyone in the park, will they try to venture out? And if they venture out into the actual world, what does that mean? You know?
And it gets back to my first and fundamental question. Sure, Ford's unleashed all of these androids, but how many of them are actually aware? That's the thing that gets me. That's why I kept focusing so much on the budding.
How do you need them to be aware if you just want to them to go out and create chaos in the real world?
Well, but it was not my impression that Ford purely wanted to create chaos. I believe what he saw as his way to correct his error of 30 years was to finally free, and when I say free, I don't mean let them out in the park. I mean let them become self-aware, the machines that he had been trapping all of this time. But so if he's just let robots loose and the vast majority of them aren't even self-aware, that's chaos, that's a mess. But I thought that he was trying to do a little better by actually freeing the machines that were trying to be aware that he had imprisoned over all of that time. So, you know, that's it.
But you're going to have to create chaos first for them to get out
Do that. He's had 30 years of chaos in the park. But still, yeah, okay. I'm just saying I am really very interested in the sentient machines, not just your standard robots run amok that's going to be killing people.
I did find at the end there when the two robots, the snake lady and the other guy, when they were just running around killing folks, it was interesting in that, you know, you expect them to just do a lot of chaos, but we've seen this before. You know what I'm saying? And that's like the only thing that I was like, okay, well, we've seen it before. It was interesting. It was fun to see them hold a machine gun the first time because they've used to like rifles and stuff. So that was a little fun, but we've seen that before.
We have seen, and if that is how Westworld by itself had ended, it would have been the biggest disappointment because, yes, you know how sensitive I am about crap that we've seen before time and time again. But we had three more subplots going on to flesh that out to make it not so cliched.
I really just like the way he ended. Like, you know, I want to exist as music now. Mozart, Chopin. Exists as music. They're dead, but you know they're in music form. And now I'm gonna be in what code form is? What is he gonna be in?
His children are out now. His androids are his music. His androids are his music.
Are they, or is it the code behind them?
Well, same thing, but yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm. That's so exciting, Carl.
Well done.
Exciting.
Good going, you guys. Thank you for actual sci-fi.
Oh, my God. It felt so risky. Mm-hmm. You know, like how, and then I think it got good ratings and people were really into it. So.
And you have to wonder, I mean, it was, I believe it was well constructed as a series, but you wonder, I can't always tell what makes a good sci-fi story one that people will like, because maybe it was just so well put together, because the themes were so big and powerful that typically some of this stuff might lose an audience or it might bore some people, but it wasn't that they managed to find the right mix of violence and sex and philosophy that it worked, or was it that they managed to avoid so many cliches to
get to
that stuff? I can't figure it out. I can't, because look, you know, we've seen some great sci-fi that was thoughtful and entertaining get canceled prematurely. And so now, you know, we're gun shy when we see stuff. It's like, oh crap, this is too good. It's going to get canceled.
I think because it had tits in there, that people, that the lowbrows came in, and that's enough for them. Because to me, I barely saw that stuff. It was just like, oh, tits. I have those. Whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I don't understand. But people need to see that on TV, but whatever.
I don't know. Maybe. I was trying to have a more optimistic view of humanity, but you might be right. More tits.
Really? What sci-fi really? Need? More in 2016, tits. You have an optimistic view of humanity?
I trust me. It's all I got at this point. It's all I got left is, come on, humanity.
You living please. In the swamp, dude. I don't know.
And it's getting deeper every day here.
Oh my god, we're gonna wrap this up, guys. So any I think we have final thoughts on Westworld, but I mean, what about things that you want to see? Like, have you watched a movie recently? Have you watched Future World? Do you
it's been a while since I've seen Future World. I
haven't Westworld seen it. Should I watch Future World? Because I've been scared.
Yeah. It's not as good as Westworld, but
Westworld, hey, that tone of it, man, that was rough going from like the show to watching the film. Ooh, that was rough.
What you didn't see the film first?
I saw the film first because Stephanie made me watch it, but then I watched Westworld, the TV show, and I was like, you know, let me watch the movie again to see, and I was just like, whoa.
Yeah. Well, in a lot of ways it stayed true.
Oh my god, no! But the music was like. And it was all happy-go-lucky, and then there was, hey, Jim, what do you think about your vacation in Westworld? It was super fun, and I was just like, they having like interviews on the news. It was just weird, and it was just a different tone.
It was 1973, so, I mean, look, that was radical filmmaking at the time, because the interviews made it feel real, and the commercialism of the theme park was just like how they would have rolled out Disney World. I'm sure they used like footage and commercials from Disney World to help them create the original Westworld intro. So, you know, it did its thing at the time. It was powerful and fun and thoughtful. And the other thing is, and I keep bringing this up and people look at me like I'm crazy, but the 1970s, particularly sci-fi in 1970, was dark, dark, dark. Star Wars was the only light in 1970 science fiction.
What was the one, the middle one? Empire?
That was 80s. But even still, it still had the fallout.
It was before my time.
Sci-fi in the 70s was rough. I mean, that mess was, you know, it's people, you know, the damn dirty apes. All right, that was the 60s. But the point, they had, you know, the other episode. Sci-fi had this slow, dark, pessimistic vision of the future through all of the 70s sci-fi. It was so hard to watch at that time.
People are going to look back on whatever the aughts and the teens are, and they're going to be like, oh man, a post-apocalypse, what a bummer. Everything is post-apocalyptic and dark.
It's like that 30-year cycle where that theme came back. I didn't like it in the 70s. Didn't like it when it came back again in the aughts. So, given that, Westworld was like a pick-me-up compared to, you know, some of the other stuff that was going on around that time. I mean, seriously, like Capricorn One. You had Andromeda Strain. All of the sci-fi had the same very dark, pessimistic tone. And it wasn't until, you know, Star Wars.
A New Hope.
Yeah, a new freaked everybody out so bad. It wasn't until honestly 1980 that sci-fi started to wake up and lighten up a little. Star Wars, the pacing of it, the lightness of it, and I do say relative lightness, because it's still a dark and a very slow story.
Yeah,
you sit back and you watch A New Hope, and it is the slowest out of every freaking Star Wars ever out there.
you know, it had a great ending and a big crescendo and a lot of action. And, you know, given the effects and what they had to work.
Sorry, I don't see it. I guess I've seen it so many times. It just,
you've seen it so many
times. It feels slow.
But, oh, trust me, the difference between the beginning and the farm boy and wandering around in the desert, geez, the dialogue between R2 and 3PO, if it wasn't for the wonder of for the first time seeing, quote, robots having real personalities like that, the dialogue, well, I'm not going that way. Well, you go that way and see how long you... He's having an argument with beeps, with slow dialogue in
a
desert.
It was
did what? It was slow as dirt, literally. We see it's slow, but given the context of the 70s, it was radical. It was radical, but you know, you go back and watch it, and so anyway, so you can feel the 70s even in Star Wars.
Well, Carl, I'm gonna sound like you for a second. I want a little hope in my sci-fi. I hope they bring that
too.
Shit back.
I like hope. I want them to bring...
Not even hope, because don't they have a quote like, hope is for suckers or something? Like hope is the last something of... Or, yeah, that's my Shakespeare and it's not working out. But it's like, hope is bad. So I need some goodness. I need some light.
I like,
you know,
light.
Forget the hope. Bring me the light.
Yeah, 80s sci-fi is all light. It's 80s sci-fi.
But you know
light.
What? I don't need it to be funny. It doesn't have to be funny. I don't really need it to be funny. I just want it to be not so dire.
Yep. I agree.
Yeah. So yeah, Carl, I think we should shut it down. I got to get up and go to work because I have a job now.
Go Miss Responsible.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm adulting.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. So that's our show, guys. We love your voicemail. We'll play it right here on the show. Carl will respond to you. I will heckle you. 773-336-2686. We have a website. You can go old school and leave a message on our website. I think you can log in with your Facebook account and leave a message, and it'll post to Facebook. Or you could just go to Facebook because we have a group. You can text us or tweet us at Twitter. And leave us a review on iTunes, something positive, or I will hunt you down. So thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye.
Sleep well, Dolores.
Bring her back online.
End of line.